you going to call? Well, for us, it's Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Hello there, Chad.
That wouldn't have been the Bill Murray vehicle I would have picked for my intro music, but what can I do?
Look, it's random. The computer just rules our lives. We never know what's going to come up.
Ah, okay. Well, at least it's from the right generation.
There you go. Well, look, everything's kind of off today because normally we talk with you on Mondays. I believe today's Thursday. I have no idea what's happening.
Yeah, I'm off every day anyway, Rich. Completely messed up, especially when I don't do my radio appearances on the right days. That throws me off all through the weekend.
Well, we're happy to have you here, whatever day of the week it is, and a lot of things to talk about this afternoon. Let's start with the Celtics. They got their man announcing yesterday, Ime Udoka, as the new coach, and seems to be almost universally greeted with thumbs up and seems like the right guy for the job.
First black coach in Celtics history, I saw on Twitter.
Yeah, that's what Jay Williams said. Well, actually, he didn't. Somebody hacked his account, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, when people hack accounts, they go in and make proclamations about basketball coaches. It's what they do.
Yes,
you got to own that L, I think, in that case. But he's certainly been corrected in the time since, and it looks like a great hire. I mean, the only question is that he doesn't have head coaching experience in the NBA, and that's not a prerequisite now. Steve Nash did a really good job with a complicated Nets team this year, even though they didn't end up winning the title because of injuries. He handled a lot of situations with that team well. You tend to see it in the NBA where maybe a guy can step up from being an assistant coach to the main chair and do a pretty good job. Udoka is already well known around the league. He's got the pedigree, having spent all those years with Pop and winning a title and 2014 with the Spurs, and the thing I really like, among a lot of things I like about him, is the familiarity with Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and Marcus Smart, if he's still on the roster, and it sounds like they signed off on him, and he's familiar with them already from the time of the World Championships in 2019, so this seems like a really good hire by Brad Stevens for a lot of different reasons.
How much validity is there to the notion that the players will have a bit more respect for a guy who's done it as a player?
There's probably some there. I think it's been exaggerated, like a lot of things, over this frustrating past season with the Celtics. I mean, the Kemba Brad story was out recently, and that one was blown way, 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 way out of proportion, especially given the sourcing history of the reporter that wrote it. Things like that tend to stick as gospel when they're not exactly accurate. And so you tend to get a bad impression about certain things that may not even be true. And I think that happened a few times with the Celtics this season, things that were rumors and became chatter on sports radio or in columnists actually were way overblown from what the actual circumstances were. I think Kemba and Brad were on good terms. I think Brad's probably honestly happier not to be coaching Marcus any more than anything else. They had a couple issues here and there, but he still respects him, likes him a lot as a player. But I think this is just the kind of an expected Brad hire, a guy who's really deeply into basketball and has a lot of attributes beyond the fact that he's an ex-player who's seen the game from a lot of different standpoints. He's a journeyman player and an assistant coach and a G League guy and a guy who played in Europe. A lot of life experience for somebody at 43 years old who hasn't been a head coach yet. And I imagine there are a lot of different aspects to Udoka's personality and basketball pedigree that appeal to Brad.
I feel like, too, this job comes at a good time for Brad Stevens, this opportunity. And he seems like the kind of guy who would enjoy trying to figure out how to meet the financial challenges in building a roster that he'd like to have going forward.
Yeah, and Danny Ainge talked about this from the interviews he did after he stepped down, and I actually talked to him a couple days after just about the potential coaching search. He had a lot of free time, so he was calling back reporters from requests from years ago, apparently. And
hope he gets my message from about 2016.
You may get a call later today. Who knows? But he talked about the fact that Brad genuinely was involved in their team building process. I don't know if that necessarily was always a good thing. He was a big advocate for Jeff Teague, for one thing, going back to Teague's success with Atlanta against Stevens' early Celtics teams in the playoffs. And Teague being an Indiana kid, Brad kind of liked him a lot, and it didn't work out. But I think he does a pretty good sense for personnel. And as everybody else has said, it's true. Nobody knows this roster better than he does. I don't think trading Kemba Walker was an indictment of who Kemba Walker is as a player. It was an acknowledgement that we can't do this again. We can't have a season where he's there one night and, you know, he averaged 28 points a game over the last 11 regular season games. There's a real feeling that he was going to be able to contribute, and instead he missed the two most important games of the season, and you just can't have that lack of continuity again next year. That's really what doomed this team. And so there's nothing personal with Brad and Kemba. It was just that this is the right thing to do. It makes a lot of sense financially. We know how Al Horford will fit. And it was a really good first step for Brad, but the interesting deals are going to be the ones where you know, we see other guys coming in that we aren't that familiar with that he happens to like, and see how those guys work out here.
Chad Finn with us here on Downtown. Red Sox wrap up their series with the Rays tonight. It's been an interesting series, a fun series. I don't know if it's been the best baseball in the world, but it's been entertaining. I will say this. It seems like more than any other Red Sox pitcher, Garrett Richards not dealing particularly well with the new rules on sticky substances.
Yeah, this spin rate thing is... It's more amusing, honestly, than anything. Just whether it's watching the graceful way Jacob DeGrom, who may actually be this good without having putting anything on the baseball, or Ohtani has handled this with a good kind of good humor. And then you see the guys who have been the greatest suspects are kind of freaking out. Max Scherzer's slider is suddenly lost 500 RPMs and is back to his 2013 slider, which is pretty good. We saw Xander Bogaerts hit one off the wall as a rookie in the playoffs, but he's got a darn good slider still. It's just not what it was a couple of weeks ago. You know, Gerrit Cole's not striking anybody out. He's still pitching well. And then you have guys like Garrett Richards, who, frankly, one of the things that appealed to him when the Red Sox signed him the $10 million with an option for next year is that he had a really high spin rate. And I don't know if this blindsided Chaim Bloom, that Major League Baseball was so drastic in their changes this season, but it's clear that they weren't fully prepared for the fact that they may have a couple of guys on their staff who would see a significant downturn in performance if the rules changed. And lo and behold, the rules have changed, and looks like the Red Sox got a couple of things they really have to figure out. I can't see it getting any better for Richards. It wasn't great before when he could snap off a slider, and now he's basically just throwing fastballs all over the place. So it's hard to figure that he's going to be a long-term part of this rotation, or even for a few more months.
One of the other challenges that they've yet been able to deal with successfully is finding a good leadoff guy. Danny Santana and his 123 average don't seem to be the answer. Could this be the weekend we see Jaron Duran?
Well, Pedroia's coming back here.
Well, there we go.
He might get you a couple swings before the knee goes again. You know, you'd like to try it. So that's the idea. I thought Christian Arroyo was going to be the guy, but again, he had another frustrating injury, and they were hoping he would come back, but they ended up putting him on the IL today. It wasn't getting any better, so with Michael Chavis coming up. So he may be on hold for that role. I think Duran is a pretty highly probable possibility, although they still want to see him improve in the outfield. He's a real work in progress out there. This is a bad enough defensive team as it is. So it does look like he's ready as a hitter. He's got hellacious numbers at Worcester. The buzz around him, to me, reminds me of when Jacoby Ellsbury came up in 07, where Duran's Ellsbury didn't have the kind of power Duran has. Not yet. He didn't yet at that point. And Duran doesn't quite run like Ellsbury did, but he's just a guy you feel like could give you a real spark. And I don't know, Sox are 6-7, 7-7 in their last, 13, 14 games, and they probably could use a boost here. You'd hope it would be pitching. But Duran might be somebody who is really capable of giving that lineup a little jolt.
You mentioned Pedroia. He'll be honored this weekend at Fenway Park. And there have been people who have had his level of love from the fans, obviously Ortiz first among them. But to me, it's always been the people love Pedroia because they could see themselves in him. They saw him as the kind of player they would be if only given that chance.
Yes, Butch Hobson and the Drew brothers were also similarly beloved in my household. I don't know if that's universal, but that's how it is down here in Lowell.
Well, we know that about old Clell Hobson. We all loved him.
That's right. If you grew up a certain age, you actually did. If you're a fan, then from in 1977 or 79, that's the time it didn't really work out. But yeah, Pedroia, you know, it looks like an everyman little guy, and didn't have a great body when he came up. You know, Francona had to tell him to get into better shape after his first call up, and the hairline went against him there through the years. But I always thought that the way Pedroia looked really led to people underestimating how talented he was. Mm. I mean, this was a guy who was one of the best college players of his era, who was so good at shortstop that Ian Kinsler had to transfer to a different school. Ian Kinsler is going to be on the Hall of Fame ballot someday, just like Pedroia will be. So, extraordinary athlete who didn't look the part, but boy, if you don't like Dustin Pedroia, I don't know what you were watching, but the guy left it out there every day and ended up abbreviating his career because of the way he played. But we were pretty lucky to be able to watch him for all those years.
It was great to have Jerry Remy back in the broadcast booth this week. Do we know yet? He was in Mass General for a few days, and of course everybody worries about him given his past history. Do we know what the situation was?
No, I texted with him a couple of times, and he said he was feeling much better. I know that night he had to be wheeled out of there. He was they had a stretcher in the hallway and put him in a wheelchair and took him out because he was having shortness of breath. And Nesson didn't really tell anybody what was going on that night. I checked in with OB and Eck and Mike Narachi, the director, and nobody knew anything. And Eck in particular is a straight shooter of that stuff. So it made me really worried that it was something serious that they weren't telling us about. But it sounds like it's not a recurrence of anything, that it wasn't a heart issue or anything like that. And just found himself struggling and had to go to the hospital. And I think it's an encouraging sign that he got back in the booth pretty quickly and got back to work, because that's what Jerry loves. He loves being there, and it means a lot to him to be able to go to the ballpark every day right now.
Yeah, it was great to have him back. There were some knuckleheads I saw on your timeline suggesting that there was something else going on, but everything I hear, and a lot of it coming from you, is that he loves working with Eckersley and really enjoys that three-man booth, and it sounds, you can hear that.
Yeah, they're friends. I mean, they were good friends when they played together. You know, ex guys as a Red Sox player were Dwight Evans and you know, Jerry was one of them, where they would go out and hang out a little bit on the road. Eck was much wilder, as we know, than Jerry was. But, you know, initially when Ness hired Eckersley, Jerry was doing all the games, and he didn't want to give that up. He hadn't gone through a couple of his cancer battles at that point, and you know, understandably, it was a little bit territorial about it. And Eck was very respectful, never asked for more than anything Jerry was okay with. But over the years, Jerry hasn't been able to travel as much and been able to do as much. And he's really happy right now. I think he was slated to do 105 games this year, and really happy with that number. And Eck's really happy with the number he has. You know, he has a nice life. He kind of comes up here in Kenny Bunk in the summer when he's off, and doesn't really need the money or anything like that, just does it for a love of baseball. And so they're both really satisfied with what their job is at Nesson, and they like working together because they're of the same era, and they played, one's a pitcher, one's a hitter, and they know each other really well. They've known each other almost 50 years going back to their minor league days, and they've really come to enjoy working together. So that any suggestion that Jerry left because Eck talks a lot was absolute nonsense.
I noticed you posted a little meme from Ted Lasso, which I just finally watched last weekend. Have you seen it?
Yes, I watched it maybe two or three weeks ago, and me and my son are like on our third viewing through it now. It's phenomenal.
Isn't that great? God, and what a, you know, timing's everything, and could you have had a better show for what we've all been through in the last 15 months?
I got to tell you, Rich, my life philosophy is very similar to Roy's, and it's a wonder I haven't talked like him on your show before. So.
I love Roy.
Coming here one of these days. I've been telling people this, and they believe me, but he's probably one of my five favorite television characters of all time. I was like up there with, you know, Michael Scott or whatever, and Sam Malone. But Roy's a laugh every scene he's in.
Yeah, it's great. A wonderful show, too. Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Chad, great catching up with you, even on a Thursday. It felt, God, I don't know, it felt a little risque. I enjoyed it a lot.
Good to mix it up every once in a while.
Darn right. You don't want to be too predictable in life. So have That's a great right. weekend, and we'll see you next time, whatever day it happens to be.
You got it. Take care.